Thank you very much. We are here to bring you the story behind the music you love and to introduce you to the men who make that music at Orchestra Hall. You'll also get to hear an informal and easy-to-understand discussion of music and its interesting personalities. And what's more, you, listening right now, have an opportunity to win two main floor tickets for a concert by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra at Orchestra Hall. And today, let's turn to the pages in your symphony scrapbook devoted to the what is known as the king of instruments, the violin. And we have with us Mr. Jerry Sobranski, member of the violin section of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Mr. Sobranski, I'm sure our listeners would like to have you identify the selection you played at the beginning of the program and perhaps play some more from that for us.
Surely. That was from Death and Transfiguration by Richard Strauss.
Thanks very much. Now, in introducing you, I said that one of the purposes of this program is to introduce our listeners to the people who make music at Orchestra Hall, and it always interests me. Every once in a while, someone comes up and mentions he listened to this program, and he knows just where you sit and knows something about you. So I think what we should do is to, before we talk about the violin or have any more violin music, is talk a little bit about you. Can you tell us something about your background? When you started studying the violin, was that your first instrument? Where you studied? What orchestral experience you've had? In other words, what we want now is a little bit of your biography.
Well, I started when I was about 8 years old. I'd been brought up on violin music. My dad was an amateur violinist, and we had all sorts of recordings around the house, and that was the first music I ever heard, and naturally I wanted to study the violin. So when I was about 8 years old, I had my first fiddle, three-quarter size violin, and I started at the Cleveland Institute of Music, where I studied for about 2 years. And then I studied with Mr. Charles Richlich, who incidentally was a classmate of Raphael Kublik's father, Jan Kublik. And I studied with Mr. Richlich until I graduated from high school. And from there, I went to the Manus School of Music in New York, where I studied with Paul Stasiewicz.
Who's now in Chicago.
Who's now in Chicago, yes. And I think that's what brought me to Chicago, because I was called into the service when I was studying at Manus. I was in for 3 years, and then when I came out, I found that Mr. Stasiewicz was in Chicago, so I came here to study with Mr. Stasiewicz at Chicago Musical College. And for 2 summers while at the college, I played in the Grand Park Orchestra. And then I went down to New Orleans for 1 year. I played there, and I came up here and got in Chicago Symphony in the at the start of the 49th season.
If you had to start over again, would you take the violin? That is, we take for granted that you'd want to be a symphony musician.
Well, I think so. I still like the violin. Of course, the field is very competitive in strings. But right now, I believe the string players, there's a shortage of string players.
Yes, I was going to pick you up on that statement, very competitive. Of course, it is for the finer musicians, but we do. All orchestras are having a terrible time trying to find capable string players.
Well, I doubt whether the Chicago Symphony would ever have a really difficult time, but the smaller orchestras may. Because, after all, the ambition of all musicians is to get into one of the major symphonies. But I remember when I was back in high school, they put emphasis on wind instruments. fact, if you played a violin, cello, and were fairly talented, they would try and talk you into studying bassoon or oboe and so forth, and I think that's what's brought about the shortage of string instruments.
Yes, I agree with you on that. The emphasis for the last 15 or 20 years has been on the winds, and then I think it's a pity, too, that in high school, the emphasis is placed on the fun of joining the band. Also in college, you go to all the football games and all the sports events. Well, the poor fellows who play in the symphony orchestra get the opportunity to play in assembly once a month or something like that. And I think it's a pity that the emphasis has been put on just one side. Well, I'm pretty sure that every violin player in a symphony, I've said this before several times on this program, has ambitions to play a concerto with his own orchestra. And I usually find that members of the violin section appearing in this program have a concerto that they prepared. Tell me what your favorite is.
Well, I have no favorite, but I had been working on the Winiowski violin concerto.
Very melodious one. I wonder if we could have some of that.
Sure, I'll play a little bit of the second movement, Romance.
The violin, of course, has had a very, very long history going back through the centuries. I think too often we take for granted that the instrument has always been what it is. Modern violin goes back, doesn't it, to about the 16th or 17th century.
Yes, totally.
The great violin makers of Cremona. And I'd like to ask a question, too, about the instrument that you're using. Is it an old one or a
Yes, this is an old Italian instrument, Carlos Landolfi, which I just acquired last April, made in around 1730.
I was reading an article on the instruments of the orchestra recently, and the writer, who is somewhat of an authority, I believe, said something to the effect that there's no miracle that makes a Strad or an Amati violin necessarily more beautiful sounding than a modern violin, that some people think it's the varnish that these makers put on, and he disputed that. He pointed out that a very good violinist can take any instrument, modern instrument, make it sound beautiful, while an amateur playing on a Strad would make it sound like a cat in agony. Now, how do you feel about that, the dispute that goes on all the time between the old instruments and the new? Because the very fact that you have an old instrument, in a way, answers that question, but
Get
your point.
Well, there are some very fine modern instruments made, but I have yet to hear any modern instrument that sounds as good as a very fine Italian instrument.
That is, do you think that anyone outside, say, of a person who's a combination of a finely trained musician, an antiquarian, that combination, would be able to tell, to have an ear test, successfully pass an ear test held between the Strad and a good modern instrument?
Well, I think a well-trained ear can tell the difference.
I remember one time when I was with the Boston Symphony, and the Koussevitzky and the Boston Symphony dedicated the new Kleinhans Auditorium in Buffalo, and Koussevitzky was asked what he thought of the auditorium, and he said it was a beautiful auditorium, but in 50 or 75 or 100 years, it'd be much better sounding auditorium because the wood, the panels on the side, would absorb the beautiful sounds of orchestra music and therefore give back more beauty of tone. Would you say that's true also, say, of a violin? That's what makes an old violin much more valuable than a modern one.
Well, they say that the aging has a great deal to do with it. I know some of the fellows in the orchestra have new violins made with old wood, which sound quite good, but still not like the old instruments. I think they haven't discovered the secret. I don't know what it is.
Sort of a miracle, a minor miracle, I guess, or a major miracle. But I was wondering if we could hear another selection now on that lovely instrument you have.
Yes, I'd like to play part of the fourth movement of the Rachmaninoff Second Symphony.
Thanks very much, Mr. Sobranski, for this interesting program, which you've added to our scrapbook. And now we're happy to send a pair of tickets for a concert by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra at Orchestra Hall to Miss Edna Bowerly of Chicago for her interesting anecdote, which we're adding to our scrapbook. She said, until the following incident transpired, it's doubtful that during a symphony performance, a handkerchief was ever used as a signal. The writer recalled vividly the day when Maestro Frederick Stock did just that. She said it occurred during a performance of Ravel's Bolero, which begins with the drum muffled with a white handkerchief. At a given measure, Mr. Stock, with his left hand, indicated to the drummer to remove the handkerchief. The percussionist apparently caught no glimpse of either this or the second, even more emphatic hand or gesture. As moments passed, everybody got excited until finally the resourceful conductor drew from his own pocket a white handkerchief, a definite wave of which brought a hasty jerk of muffler from the drum. And thanks to Mrs. Bowerly for her interesting anecdote.